Hello, everyone. This is your co-host, Stu, and I'm here with the paranormalist, Patty Wilson. How are you today, Patty?
I'm fine. How are you doing tonight?
I'm very well, thank you. So, topic for today?
Oh, our topic today is going to be really interesting. It is demons in media.
Oh, my. Okay. Well, with that being said, and I'm just going to ponder that for a little bit. If you're watching on YouTube, please consider clicking the like button down below, the little thumbs up. That helps the YouTube metric give you more content from us. Number one, subscribe, click the bell to be notified when we release new content. We have several Facebook groups, the Paranormalist Podcast, the Paranormalist Group Share, and the Paranormal Asylum, as well as our email address, paranormalist@theparanormalistpodcast.com. And you can send us your ideas, your feedback, your comments, whatever. We would be thrilled to hear from you. And with that being said, I'm going to turn it back over to you. Thanks,
Patty. All right. So as you know, I do these like down the rabbit hole things. And I came across this article, and it was about a American exorcist who had written a book called Diary of an American Exorcist. And I'm reading an interview with him, and he says that the thing that fascinated him is he figured that there would be a lot of interest in some of the cases. But what he was surprised about is the thing that people were fascinated with and wanted to talk about was that demons are sending text messages and emails. And they're sending them to the exorcist, they're sending them to the families of the person possessed, most often from the phone of the person who's possessed. And oftentimes, even from somebody else's phone, if they're in the house with that person. And that's where we're going to start. On the other side of this, I start listening to a podcast. I listen to all types of podcasts, you know, so, and this podcast caught me and my attention. And it was talking about how, as we become less and less Christian, old gods are coming and taking over again. And they called this pastor called him, I mean, I believe he's actually a rabbi, was talking about what was called the Dark Trinity and how they're using the internet to reach out to people and build the tentacles to make themselves famous again, if you will. So I'm reading the one thing and I'm watching this other thing and I'm listening to this and I'm like, holy crap, these things are in parallel tracks. So then I begin to dive into the rabbit holes even further, and that's where we're headed today. So the first thing I want to talk about is the Diary of the American Exorcist, and we'll work our way down.
I think the title of this episode would be Demons Are Tech Savvy.
They are, actually. And that's actually one of the things that the Catholic priests and these different people are talking about, mm-hmm. Okay. Is that they are using the internet. Okay, so the first thing you have to understand for those who aren't really demon savvy is that demons have rules that they have to function within. Now, they will push the envelope of that rule to the nth degree. For example, they have to have you invite them into your life in some fashion. So traditionally, it has been things like messing with the occult or sometimes they'll target a person and give them a series of bad luck. Or, and this is a very common one, I often heard it when I would be doing a demonic case. I would, you know, hear somebody tell me, you know, it was right around the time of that great big bang on the side of the house. Like a day or so later, everything just went crazy. So I'd ask them a question. I knew by experience what they were talking about, and they would hear what sounded like somebody took a baseball bat and was just pounding the side of their house or the roof of their house or the front door. And you know, your instinct in that moment is to jump up and go see what's going on, you know, who's outside your house damaging it. The minute you open the door, the window, whatever, you have invited them in. Not that you deliberately did anything, but you gave them the entrance. The other thing being, you know, if you start focusing your energy on the paranormal and the dark stuff, you're giving an opening for them to come through. You're saying, I have an interest in you. So yeah, I'd like to learn more. And that gives them the entrance to come in. And it's been that way from the beginning of time. Go ahead.
You know, from this moment on, anytime I open the front door, I'm going to say, you're not permitted to come in, and then open the door.
Yep. I have to tell you, I have had a dozen or more cases where that pounding, mm-hmm. sounding like somebody tearing the siding off, you know, something like that. And it's that, and it usually happens late at night or when you least expect it. And so you're really startled. And the most people jump up and they go to see what's going on, what's happening. It's a very normal reaction. And, you know, demons are fallen angels, so they're smart. They've had a long time to study humanity. They're not omnipotent. They don't know everything. They don't have power over you, despite what they tell you. But words mean things. Everything we do means something in a spiritual sense, you know? And so we don't think along those lines. We think in the here and the now. And we see, other than, I would say, some very devout Christians and Muslims and what have you, we see the world as this level playing field where everybody's just kind of moving along, doing their thing, when we don't realize that there are other forces at play from the spiritual realm working with us, interacting with us, waiting for us to make a mistake or try to protect us, because that's the angelic realm, is to try to protect you, while the demons are looking for ways to get through to you or to harm you. And so we don't think about it that way. And I told you a story a long time ago, which clicked in my head when I started to read this stuff. Do you remember me telling you the story about my son's friend Zach, who had downloaded something on the internet? Okay.
Downloaded demon. Yep.
He downloaded this thing, and like the world went crazy for him for like 4 days. And it took time to put this all back where it needed to go. And I've had other things like that happen where something seemed to open up through a download of something that somebody did, something they were interested in. And at the time, I thought it was their intent, because intent is really important in everything we do. We don't think about it as humans, but your intent, if your intent in getting into the horror stuff is because you really have this draw to the dark side and you intend, you know, to seek it out over and over again, you're putting yourself at an opening. And, you know, and it goes for video games. It goes for all that stuff. Everything we do has to have an element of intent. And I know this is a long way to get to the stories, but you have to understand this to make the stories make sense. So you can open doors, books you read. The movie The Exorcist is a great example. So people went to watch the movie The Exorcist when it came out in the theaters, right? And if you go back and you read the literature from the newspapers at the time this all happened, there were dozens of people collapsing in the theaters, thrashing around, you know, screaming that they were possessed. Suddenly, there were very few exorcists at the time because it was something that was kind of phasing out. There was a small contingent, mostly in the Catholic Church, some charismatic and evangelical. And, you know, every faith has a method for exorcisms, you know, every faith under the sun. But it was very low key. And then all of a sudden, people were talking about it like crazy. And I will tell you, some of it was hysteria, probably the vast majority of it. But some very interesting and legit cases came of it. And that's when Father Malachi Martin starts to come out into the world, and people learn that he's an exorcist. And for those who are really interested, Father Malachi Martin wrote a book. You can go and get it. It's a phenomenal read. It explains how the devil and demons work in your life. It's a fascinating book, and it's actually case studies with some information built into each story. So that has to be understood to come to this. So now we come to the beginning, The Diary of an American Exorcist. And he talks about three cases in particular that he had issues with this with. So the first case was he was doing an exorcism of a young woman, and from her phone, while she was there with him, and he could see her, he starts getting these text messages. And it says, he gets a message and it says, her torments start now, priest, all night, while you and that friend of yours, meaning the other exorcist, are preparing to sleep. We will make her bleed. We're glad she's going away from you now. Be ready. We're coming for you and for the girl. And the priest texts back. This is real time. Okay. Be gone in the name of Jesus. And the entity texts us back. Stop. She'll die. Kill her. Come on, priest. Do it. If you don't, we will. We want her dead. The priest texts back again. Get behind me, Satan. Then the text shoots back. Stop. Stop it. We'll hurt her more. We hate you. Stop leading her. There's no power in your priesthood. You're weak. You know there's nothing you can do for her. And it continues on in this vein. And it goes on and it says, he tells them that she's going to leave. He's going to get them to leave. And he says, you are going to leave her. And they go, we're not leaving. He says, you're forbidden, foul fiend. He says, and then the being says, we're abusing her. She'd be better off dead. Let her go. She can't handle this sexual and physical abuse we'll give her. So this is happening real time in mm-hmm. front of them. That's an amazing event. And he documents all this as a part of the story, not thinking it was of any serious interest. You know, the Warrens talked about telephone calls from demons where they would hear their phone would ring and a voice on the other side would hiss at them and say, you know, something that was very personal to them. I know your secret sins, and name something. And, you know, if you continue, I will tell the world. And, you know, their response was, tell the world. We all have sin, you know, and it was just a way of screwing with their head. So then he goes on to the next case. He talks about the mother of a demoniac, a young woman who was demon possessed. And she receives these text messages. And they start out with, don't worry, I will take care of her. There's nothing you can do to help her more. You've tried to help her, but you failed. Now, this is while the exorcism's going on. They're here in the building together. And she's watching her daughter, who is participating in the exorcism ritual, and everybody's there. The phone's laying on a desk or a dresser, you know, within eyeshot of everybody. And then suddenly her phone starts texting her these messages. Just so you know, it's going to be interesting. You don't know when we'll come, but we will. And you just won't believe it all. Let us have our fun. And you can see, like, it's about bullying, cowling them, kind of undermining their belief that this is going to happen. Because the one thing that demons can't fight is your faith. At the end of the day, I've done a few exorcisms. It is always about the exorcist's faith versus the demons. So if you have a stronger faith than they do, you can wear them down. Because you are given dominion over the demons. It says so in the Bible. But they use a lot of like emotional and psychological screwing with you. Like you're stupid, you're too tired, you're too weak, shaman. Why are you doing this? You know, to try to make you feel like you're losing the fight. It's, you know,
taunting. Yeah.
Yeah, it's taunting. It's misdirection. It's they'll blow themselves up and say how good they are and how amazing they are and how strong they are and how they can do whatever they want to this person and on and on. I had a case where I was working it and I heard this voice in my head and it said, I will kill you if you keep this up. And I said, I don't care. Look behind me. There's 10 more exorcists coming after me. And then it said, I will come for your children. And my response was, well, if they die, they'll be with God. And then it just stopped dead for a little bit. And then you could see like it was trying to gear up, like, though, those are the things that always get you. Why aren't you playing the game? And you could just kind of hear the wheels turning like, okay, what does she want? What does she like that much? What does she care for that I can threaten? And I wanted them to know there was nothing. Not that I don't love my children dearly, but I wasn't giving them that turf. I wasn't allowing them that strength over me. And I knew God would watch over them. Believe me, long before I would ever participate in something like that, there was a lot of preparation, and a lot of it was about protecting the people I loved. So this is a second case of that. Then the third case that he talks about in his book, which I thought was also fascinating. So this is received by the father of a young woman who is possessed. And again, he knew that she did not have the phone with her at that time. This is fascinating. And plus, whenever you go and you look at it, there's nothing on there. There's no dialogue at all. Now, you can say it can be deleted, and that's true. But a person who is, and I assure you the Catholic Church has people that can do this, that is good with the phones, you know, nothing's ever deleted completely. If anybody that's ever worked on computers and stuff like that knows, there's a trace, there's a trail. And it can be found, and nothing was ever found. So this last one to the father, he says, "My baby and I are going to have fun tonight. You should have protected her more." Again, that's what a father would feel guilt about, not being able to protect his daughter. You are going to give her up. You are going to get worn down. You're going to lose patience. She's mine. Say goodbye to your baby soon. You don't know who I am, but I'm coming for your baby. She's mine. And it just continues that dialogue. And he's texting back through some of this. And you know, and then they'll argue with you. They'll argue and say, you know, the things that they know are going to get to you the most. But you have to understand that nothing they do is haphazard. It's not just an individual taunting. There is a specific goal in mind that has been set in play since the beginning of time. And they will not do anything that wastes time. They are working toward a goal. And so even though it seems ridiculous and silly to go after somebody's daughter and taunt that person or the priest or whomever, there is a goal in mind. And so they're going to discourage, they're going to dissuade, they're going to do whatever they can. And what I thought was interesting is that the priest talks about, he thought he was the only one. Like, these were crazy things to say. And it isn't like there's a lot of priest exorcists getting along, you know, getting in groups and having like seminars. They don't do that as a general rule.
They don't have Facebook groups. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, they don't. I mean, as a rule. And they don't sit. I mean, I do know that there are a few times that I'm been aware of a group of priests who are exorcists and ministers gathering together to talk and pray. But so he's not thinking much about it, other than it's just an odd little aside to the main story of what happened. And then he starts to talk to some other priests after the stories come out in his book, and he gets contacted, and they're like, "Oh my goodness, man, I thought I was the only one that ever had something crazy like that happen." And he's like, "This is more common than I thought." So, that was the beginning of where I started. And then I'm heading down, and I came to this, there's a group of priests run by, at least partially run by, Father Jose Francisco Squalia. I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. And this is in Manila in the Philippines. Now, this is the Archdiocese of Manila, and they have created a group of exorcists and associated people, 170 strong. That's how much of a need there has been in that diocese, in that region. Now, there aren't all exorcists. There's physical doctors, medical doctors, there's psychologists, there's lawyers, there's nurses. There's a whole team that goes in, because they want to make sure that when they're dealing with this, that there's no other thing that could possibly be at play. So, you know, there's a winnowing is what it's called, when you're looking to winnow out the chaff and make sure that you're dealing with a real exorcism and not somebody who's mentally ill or seeking attention or whatever. So there's a process. And this priest writes about a famous case that happened to him in 2003. In this case, the office cell phone used by the Archdiocese received messages from the phone of a female ex-Satanist who had been referred to this priest for an exorcism. So she was in the process of going through that, you know, the beginning stages of deciding if she required an exorcism, if she was sincere about it. One of the things that that's a struggle for an exorcist is a lot of times people will have an exorcism, they miss their demon. I know that sounds insane, but it's a part of how they've lived their life for quite a while, and they'll invite them back in. Wow. There's a famous case from the Warrens from years ago, and they did 17 exorcisms over like 20 some years with this guy, because he would go for a while, but he didn't know how to cope by himself, and so he would get weak and he would just give up, and he would say, it's fine, just come back, I don't care. And at that point, it would start again, and he would become this violent man, and his family would know something was wrong, and they would call, and they had him, you know, examined by doctors, by medical doctors, by psychologists and psychiatrists, and it just continued on. And it is something that people don't talk about much, but it happens over and over. People just get tired and they give up, and they're lonely. They don't know how to navigate the world without this. This is part of who they've been for a long time. So they let it come back. Because it's an active thing to have to fight it off day to day, because they know they've worn you down before, so they've got a good shot at wearing you down again. So it takes time and commitment to that process. And people will sometimes give in. So this is this woman, and she's former Satanist. She's seeking assistance from this archdiocese in 2003. The priest was in his office speaking with the possessed woman and her companion when the companion's phone began receiving text messages from the possessed woman's phone that was in the other room near the secretary Gina's desk. So she was in the diocese, this diocese secretary's named Gina. Gina's at her desk. They had asked her to leave the phone there because, you know, whenever I'll be honest with you, it can be dangerous. So you don't want people to have anything. So they said, leave your purse and stuff out here. They don't want her to have something she could attack somebody with if she would go into one of those fits. So it's sitting there nicely on the lady's desk. And the message comes from that phone to his. And it says, don't believe, Father. Another one, meaning talking to this girl, like, you know, don't believe, Father. Another one said, he's a sinner and a liar, and he won't be able to help you at all. And he's reading these as they're coming in. And then Gina, the secretary, gets a phone call from the same woman's phone on the office phone. And she hears this voice, and it says, it's not true that God loves her, you know. She's going to fall if she tries to get this exorcism. Tell the priest he's not going to succeed. And she just goes on. And it freaks her out. And she realizes she's not talking to the woman. She couldn't be. She's in the other room with the priest. And it freaked her out considerably. But, of course, you know, the priest manages to do the exorcism. He gets her to... because he saves her, she, you know, she's got free will, so she could always invite it back. But as of the time of this writing, she was fine. And so were the other people that I spoke about. They went through the exorcism process and succeeded. But this priest in particular, Squala, Father Squala, talks about some stuff that I thought was really interesting. He said, the devil has a power over anything electrical. If this place is infested, for example, they'll want their presence known. They usually flicker the lights or move things or turn the TVs on and off, things like that. You see a lot of that in the old Hollywood movies and stuff as well. He says, if I give a talk and I have a certain gadget, the devil would easily shut it down because he's an expert in anything electrical. First of all, you have to understand these things, like anything else, they're a spiritual creature. They move through electromagnetic energy. They can control that universe. And he said that this is where he starts getting me into the internet and all of this. And on the other hand, I'm listening to that rabbi telling virtually the same type of story, but from two different perspectives. And it was interesting to hear it coming from both sides, saying something very similar coming right down the middle. And he says, Squala, the Father Squala, is worried about how the devil uses modern technology to lure young people through the internet, especially during the lockdown. He talks about how people spent a great deal of time in cyberspace because they were lonely and miserable, and they were poking into things that they might not have otherwise, and what have you. And he said that in 2000, they found that children the age of 10 to 17 have only 1/3 of the face-to-face encounters with people of generations past. And it's only gotten worse. And that makes sense. It does. People are on the internet so much more. I have to say, even in my own life, I've watched my family members with their little children playing, and the kids are trying to get their attention, and they're all sitting there on their cell phones going like this. How many times have you been in a restaurant and seen four people sitting at a table and they're all tapping while they're talking? They're really not paying attention to each other at all. That we've become very attached to the internet. It's become a religion in a lot of ways to some people, not every person, and nothing I'm saying is 100%. And I don't want anybody, and you can argue it all you want, I don't care. I'm just throwing these ideas out there. I'm not doing anything other than just saying this was fascinating to me. And then he talked about the fact that people are, when you start to scroll through the internet, what do they call that, doom scrolling or something, where you're constantly looking for a story, something of some sort, that people can get in almost a hypnotic state because they're so fascinated with what's going on. And I have to tell you, I don't know how many young people you have in your world, but I see this, and I will growl at people and tell them, put that damn phone down. You know,
I only have one other person. That's Mrs. Stu, although it's kind of funny because she'll sit in bed and knit. And she'll be looking at the knitting pattern and listening to a video of somebody knitting while another video is playing up in the corner. I'm like, and she's wondering why she's a knitter, why she drops a stitch or something like that. It's because you're not paying attention. You can't do these multiple things at the same time. This can't happen.
But and particularly with young people, I have to tell you, particularly with young people, they are so intent on the internet. It's scary. It is terrifying. I have a grandson who's 5, and his parents have gotten him a little tablet. He can watch a video and do different things on, play games on. I'm telling you right now, he's addicted. Like, he comes in the house, or I come in his house, and he will watch my cell phone, and he'll start, Gammo, can I watch a video of blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, this is family time. Gamma, can I play a game? No, it's family time. Gamma, could we watch a cooking video together? No, it's family time. Gamma, can you ask Mama if she'll recharge my computer so I can play more games tonight? Because he's allowed to play it until the battery wears down, and then they won't let him have it till the next day. And then finally, somebody will snap and he'll go, can I go watch the TV? Can I go watch the TV, please? And I'm like, no, it is family time. And then his dad will growl him and say, you're staying out here with everybody else. You're not going in there and lock yourself in. But it's scary to me how not just him, but a lot of kids are so fascinated. I had a client one time who was struggling with her daughter she was 12 years old, and she was beginning to cut her wrists. And, you were seeing some severe mental health symptoms, and the girl was absolutely fine. And then she had to attend, her mom got her a cell phone, and she did the same thing that millions of people do, which is, well, she needs it because sometimes I need to talk to her, or in case she gets late or lost or something, she has it. But what really happens with the cell phone is that the kids get on it, and then they get on to places like TikTok and Instagram, and then they become part of that social contagion that they're talking about, where, I'm not sure how much of this you pay attention to, but there's a huge amount of what they call social contagion. Groups of girls, in particular, young girls, who begin to cut themselves, think that they're transgender. You say all these terrible, like, you just say words randomly. I can't think of, you just sort of talk out.
Tourette's?
Tourette's. There was in Australia, there was a Tourette syndrome issue where hundreds of girls were presenting to the doctors with no history of Tourette's, no mental health problems, and they all had Tourette's. Some were faking, and it was obvious they were faking, but it was because the algorithm was pushing these Tourette videos forward. And so the girls wanted to, the social mechanism and the psychology of their brain, they wanted to fit in with what looked like the social thing. So they actually became mentally ill. They actually had psychiatrists that were working with these kids to try to undo what was being done. And the first thing that they had to do was take the phones. So back to my little girl who's cutting herself. And her mother was in talking to me about it because I was her therapist. And I said, take the phone. I can't do that. I said, yes, you can. She's 12 years old. Take the damn phone. Be a parent. If she had a gun, you would take the gun. At this point, it's physically harming her.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem. Take the phone. She came in about a week later, and she's got this whole side of her face bruised badly. And I'm like, good heavens, what happened to you? She says, I took the phone. I'm like, you what? Her daughter physically attacked her. And then screamed for like 14 straight hours because she couldn't have that phone.
That's severe addictive behavior.
It is.
Mm-hmm.
It is. So that I understand what he's talking about when he talks about that encounter. And that's not the demonic part. But if somebody is that mentally ill and it's messing with you that badly, you are open for other bad things, whether it's predators on the internet or demonic entities or whatever. So he talks about this and he says, the internet has no morality. A child will tend to search for what titillates their senses. They jump from one thing to the other, trying to sustain a high, similar dopamine level. So like when you get something, it's what makes a person do certain things. We get a reward of dopamine in our brain when we find something we like and we can do it over and over. That's what makes sports addicts and, you know, people that like that thrill. That's what makes a writer write. I often tell people that, you know, first time I was ever high was when I was 12, and it was because I literally was writing. It was the first time I ever flew out of my body like that. I was just so excited and so high. I got that feeling, not from a drug, but from doing something. That dopamine level shot up. And it's the same with the internet. You know, you see something or you do something, and then you just have to keep ratcheting it up further and further to get that same high again, that dopamine high. And he's talking about that, and he says it's temptations, and that it attacks your senses, which is what demons also do. They attack your senses, your thoughts, your physical feelings, your taste, your ability to feel, all of these things. And so he's saying that this is a way for them to get through to people. They can knock on the door and you'd click on that link, just like my son's friend, and you open the door for them. And I'm not saying everything on the internet is wrong or bad. I'm not. The extreme of this is that I have seen people who have said, and they were pastors and what have you, that the internet was designed for the devil because it's this perfect place where children and people have to go there by themselves. You don't go there with a group. You go there by yourself and you wander further and further, and the algorithms keep feeding you more and more of whatever it is that you're looking at until it just saturates you with it. And, but for some people, I could see how that happens, just like with my son's friend who clicked what he thought was a video game. And then in the real world, he started seeing consequences. He's like, whoa. That only started after I did this. And then he waited 2 or 3 or 4 days and he's telling me, I tried to delete it. I tried to do this. I tried to do that. Patty, it's just getting worse. It's just getting worse. I think there's something wrong with this. So then he goes online and he starts looking at other people and they're talking about the same thing happening to them. He's like, okay, so this isn't just my imagination. Other people have had these experiences too. He wasn't sleeping. He wasn't able to eat. He was having nightmares when he did manage to go to sleep of the main character in the video game. Now, this kid was steeped in video games from 6 years old on. He's never had this experience. This thing's haunting his days, his nights, everything. And, you know, eventually he came to me and asked me for help. So I did. And I honestly did exactly what I would have done if he had come to me and said, I think I have a demonic oppression. I literally did exactly the same thing. And I have to tell you, it worked. And I didn't say possession. I said oppression. That means that they're bothering him. They're working on him, not that they owned him. So I just thought that it was fascinating. And this, and Father Esqualia also talks about the fact that he has had, since he's created this, he said 55% of the people that come to him appear to have an infestation or a haunting or, you know, an oppression of some sort. And he goes down from there to maybe 9% have something more serious. But he talks about, he's really, you know, done a lot of work on studying on this. And he's saying that this is another way for them to open the door. And then he came to something that really caught my attention, because I come from a biblical background. He said, the Vatican has alerted Catholic exorcists to occult websites that put a curse on anyone who opens them. This means that a person in a hypnotic trance, you're focused, heavily focused on one thing, will easily appropriate the images and messages in the site. Ranking church officials in Rome have warned that the book of Revelation, the last chapter of the New Testament, refers to the second beast that will emerge from the red dragon, commonly known as Satan. They said the second beast is actually the virtual world where the devil or Satan is creating. While we have the real world, the red dragon has, that is the devil, will have two beasts come from him. One of these will create a virtual world that is different from the world of God. It has its own rules, and once people start to live there more than in the real world, it will be an escape from the struggle to become holy in this world. And this is what the Catholic Church from Rome is releasing to their exorcists right now. Said, worse, aggression and despair develop in this isolated person who's already addicted to a website. Once these thoughts have become overwhelming and crisis hits, the person becomes suicidal. He cannot, in a sense, become ready for life because the internet is suffering. A person who is not taught how to suffer cannot understand that why Christ bore the cross and why that is important.
Very interesting.
And I mean, I sat here and I read this nothing but this for 3 days. I mean, every waking moment that I was not otherwise occupied with something that needed to be taken care of. So this is what they're teaching in the seminaries. This is not a half-baked idea just, you know, from some dude on the internet randomly. It's not a Reddit thread. And he said how he came to believe all this is because when he was a young man in seminary, he had this experience happen to him. So he got on the internet. He was fascinated with religion because he was going to be a priest. And he started getting really interested in, like, the New Age stuff, you know, and he was trying to see how these esoteric New Age things fit into his Catholic belief system. And the more he got into it, the more he started to pull away from God, because they all sounded so nice. Like, the devil doesn't come always, most of the time, doesn't come evil. He comes as something meek, something pleasant, something that's mellow. And he said, as a result of him working in this, with this esoteric, you know, New Age stuff, he said, my quote unquote third eye was opened and I began experiencing demonic attacks. Eventually, I had to return to the Catholic Church and received help from other priests, which is what set him on this path. So he had this own, his own experience with this. And I just thought it was really interesting, all of the information that he was offering about all of this. And, you know, he talks about the fact that the team that he works with has psychologists, they have psychiatrists, they have counselors, they have lay therapists, they have all kinds of different people from different disciplines, and they go through all of this process. And these are the people that go through the psychological. If they just need psychological help, then they do that. They just help you with that part. If there's more that needs done, they help you with that. And there's a little small percentage, less than 9%, who actually have come to the place where they're under some form of demonic oppression or possession. He said He said, I've seen God in a tangible way. I've seen people levitate in an exorcism. I've seen people vomit mud. That's not something psychological. You can't do that. The reality is that it's diabolical. The exorcist commands in the name of Jesus and the demon reacts. You see their fear of God, especially when they are expelled and the person is liberated. I want to tell you the craziest video I ever saw. John Zaffis, for all those who know him, he's collects the haunted objects, but he's really a demonologist. That's where he has worked for many, many years. And he has an exorcist who works with him. And Johnny showed me a video from back when his aunt and uncle were alive. And it was shot with a static camera, on a tripod. And it wasn't being moved. There was nobody behind it giving different angles or what have you. So they would set five or six different cameras on tripods and strap them down so that if the exorcism got rough and the person starts attacking or shoving people, that the cameras aren't going to move if possible. And so I'm looking at this shot from this one camera directly at the guy. In fact, it was the gentleman with the 17 exorcisms. This was one of his. He's sitting there. He's a little kind of thin fella and looks like he's in his late 40s, early 50s. His arms are kind of held down by the two. John's one of the guys holding his arms down. Another person's holding his other arm. The priest is working with him. And he's got a little bald pate. You know, he's kind of a little scattering of hair. The guy with the 12 hairs that's kind of string them like spaghetti kind of deal, you know. And so you can see his face and his forehead very well. And it's straight in front of him. And all of a sudden, he looks down and you see this crack open in his forehead. And it widens and blood starts pouring out. And he turns and he looks up. And you can see the crack coming down past his eye and the blood is dripping down his face and off onto his clothes. And it's just dripping and dripping. And I'm like, oh my goodness, John. And he's like, wait for it. That's not it. Wait for it. And it just continues getting worse. And the blood's just running out of this man. And he's, you know, he's sitting there and he's shaking his arms and they're holding him down and the priest is praying. And John's like, wait for it, wait for it. And just like 2 minutes of this, I'm watching this. That's a long time, 2 minutes of blood running down this man's face out of his eyes. His other eye begins to bleed like tears, but blood coming down his face. And I'm watching all this and I'm horrified. I was still kind of young in the whole field at the time. And then all of a sudden, just as quickly as it came, you see the blood start to disappear. And then you see the cracks in his face start to come back together. And then that hole at the top that was almost, it looked like maybe an inch and a half wide, starts to just re-knit itself. And all the blood on his clothes is gone. All the blood that was on their hands is gone. And nothing has changed. They didn't change position. The camera didn't stop. Nothing has changed.
Wow.
But it was there, it was real, and then it was gone. I mean, it was real enough that they were covered in blood. He was covered in blood. And then it just started to melt away. And I just thought this was fascinating, that this is another level, another way that things are coming at us and we need to be aware of it. You know, and the reason that this is important is that people need to understand we're collateral damage in a big battle as human beings. The devil is aware of that every soul is of infinite value to God. He loves us. Which one of your kids would you pick to kill? You know, which one of your kids would you be willing to lose? And that's how he sees us as humans. And so that's why they're collecting souls. Because they want to keep that, because it causes pain to God, because it keeps you from your potential of becoming part of that beautiful collective of love that is God. And I'm sitting here looking at all of this and going, this is insane. You know, and then I came across this. And I want you to juxtaposition what I told you about the mental health components. There was a reason I told you all that. Okay. against what I'm about to tell you. So when it comes to the skills the demons have, they're versatile. They have the ability to inflict mental illness. And I could give you the Bible verse where it comes from, if you'd like. Muteness, blindness, physical deformity. they mutate outright in many ways, self-proclaiming that they are things they are not. They become physically aggressive, hateful, disruptive. Any of this sound familiar? We're seeing a lot of this everywhere, all around. And I don't know that it's all from that, but I do think that it's important that we consider the fact of what we see and what we do and what our intent is. I've had a couple people recently ask me to talk more about demons, and I could tell you 100 demon stories because there's hundreds of them throughout history. But as I was looking through stuff and kind of coming up with things to do for this particular podcast, this kept coming in my face repeatedly. And I thought, maybe this is where I'm supposed to go. You know, maybe that is what I'm supposed to be talking about. The fact that you don't have to be a bad person. If you ever look at the stories about demonic possession, they're usually nice people. You know, Annalise Michel was a beautiful little college girl who was very devout. The little boy in The Exorcist, 13-year-old little boy, he didn't do anything bad. It's not about who you are. It's about the intent of what's happening around you. It's about what doors you're willing to open. You know, him and his aunt opened a door because they mess with the Ouija board all the time. And then right after the aunt died, all of this begins to happen. And it's about questioning the things that are happening to you. I just thought it was fascinating. There's another thing I would like to read again real quick. So an example of what can happen when electrical grids go out happened in Fukushima. So we know about the tsunami and everything that happened. We talked a little bit about some hauntings that happened after that. So according to the Japanese Trade Ministry, an estimated 4.4 million homes lost their electricity. So this is what I wanted to let you see. There is compelling evidence for the existence of demons or the devil simply not being found in what we want to test as the claim, but in diabolical messages. In places where there was no electricity, messages were being passed. People were finding that they were having issues with acting out in ways that did not make sense. And in every culture, as I said, there are different methodologies. So the methodologies that were used for that culture were used to address this. But I thought it was fascinating because they were looking for something to feed them. And when they didn't have the electricity to feed them, they started turning on the humans to do that. And there's one last thing I want to talk about. So we're going onto the internet. We're talking about all the technology. So there is a new demon that has been created. His name is Loab. It is an AI art created demon. And you can get pictures of it. Basically looks like a woman with a rotting face and almost like lizard eyes. And whatever you want to call it, there was a gentleman who created this AI creature. And maybe you can explain a little bit more about this to me. So, because I'm going to read a little bit of it to you so that we can get it. You can explain it if you know. So this AI art generator created this demon from the digital realm, and he named her Loab. She is a virtual thread making the rounds on Twitter and Instagram, TikTok, and other places. And they say that whenever there's a negative prompt, the AI generators are automatically picking her. But it's not just a case of picking her as she is. They place her in new positions. They place her in different backgrounds. But her features remain the same. So he said he created an image with the prompt Brando, trying to make something that was the opposite of Marlon Brando. I have no idea why that would come up with a demon, but that's what he did. And he said a negative prompt is where in an AI you try to make something as far away from the prompt as possible. So you're going to the opposite side of it. that created a weird looking little logo, and the experiment became the opposite of that production. In turn, the prompt came to use another prompt, and then it brought up the Loeb. And he said, the woman has red cheeks, decaying eyes, appears to be a negative prompt vacuum. And when she was used to create further images, the AI found the need to reproduce increasingly violent and disturbing images and features for Loeb, but they did not change her actual look. They got more horrifying over time. And he said, I don't know what's happened here. He said, there's a misunderstanding about what's happening. AI is not surfacing the Loeb images for every negative prompt. What's being done is that the original image of the Loeb is being used in combination with new prompts. So it's not just the prompt that was originally used to call it up. Now new prompts are coming up, and other art programs are picking her up and creating new images of her. Now, no matter what you want to believe about that, you can say that's interesting, but it doesn't prove anything, and I'm not saying it does. However, this is the first time in the history of the internet that that AI, or that we as human beings, have created a demonic looking entity that is moving independently from platform to platform, creating its own new prompts as it goes. And no matter what else you say about it, whatever it is, the writer who wrote this article said, whatever it is, we are witnessing the birth of an urban legend, no matter how you look at it. The thread, which is genuinely interesting and has unsettling elements, combined with the mythos of an actual demon lurking within the AI algorithms, is something that will probably be auctioned off as movie rights to Netflix at the end of the day. But I suppose that it does raise an interesting question about AI. Does the AI own Loeb? Can she sell her? Would it anger Loeb to be controlled by other people? Would Loeb bring about the destruction? There's a lot of questions and no answers. This is all new to uncharted territory.
I mean, I've seen AI generated images before, especially for like music videos. They'll let the thing, and there's some bizarre stuff out there. So I have yet to I stay away from interacting with ChatGPT or or the like, or any kind of AI. I really I like to heed the warnings about AI. I mean, we've all watched or seen the Terminator movies and how. And yeah, it is a scary proposition.
It is.
So, I mean, that's just, so many times mankind has created things that are just not good for us.
Yes, indeed. And what I find fascinating is that people who could profit from it, which people like Elon Musk, there's 20 different creators of AI who have written a letter stating that the government needs to stop it and learn what it can do and what it can be controlled to do before we continue on, because it literally has the potential to destroy the universe. They have offered up examples. There was an example in Japan where these AI generated beings were created, and they attacked their creators and killed a couple of them. There's they've asked these AI generated characters, do you want to serve your human? And they're like, humans are bad. They destroy everything. In order to protect the universe, you must kill all of the humans. And they're giving these answers consistently over and over, because they have no emotion. They have no feeling. They don't understand anything about the psychology of a human being. They're just tasked with doing something, protect the world. How do you protect the world? You remove everything from it. Now nothing can hurt it.
Yeah, we've come a long way from Isaac Asimov's three laws of robotics.
Yep, we have. So that was what I've been doing for the last couple of days, and I found it was really interesting. I didn't go into the Dark Trinity and all of that. If people are interested, they can say, I want to hear more. I'd be happy to do it. But it just takes us into a whole different set of rabbit holes. And but I found this fascinating, because I'm hearing it from the AI side. I'm hearing it from people who have been on the internet. I'm hearing it from psychologists and psychiatrists and priests and ministers and all these different people. And I hear it in my own world in some ways. You know, this inability to turn ourselves off, to stop doing it. Like, I freak out people when I don't take my cell phone with me anywhere. It's like, why? Why is that so important? Why do I have to have every single moment documented? I just don't. I have nothing on my phone besides lots of recipes, a lot of spooky stuff, and baby pictures. That's it. If you want to see my grandchildren at every stage of development, I promise you, I can definitely do that for you. I am that grandma. But it's, to me, it's a tool that I can use. For many people, it's the user and they're the tool. And that, I think, is whenever it begins to become something right. That can be manipulated by other beings.
Yeah, I use it for work. I mean, who of us doesn't have one that they use for work? If you look at it right now, the ringers, I don't even have it buzzing. The ringers is completely turned off, you know. And like when I feel like I want to look at the phone to see if I've had anybody try to communicate with me, if it's somebody I recognize, I'll listen to a voicemail perhaps or read a text message. Otherwise, right in the garbage it goes, you know, and it's one of those things where I'll look at it occasionally, you know, during the day, but, you know, especially, you know, during my work day, I live and die by my email, you know, and
right.
Even though I have it on there, and there are times, you know, like this past week I was sitting waiting to get my hair cut, and an email came in from a coworker who needed some emails released from the spam filter. And I was able to do that from my phone. But that's, you know, that's the situation where he had to wait a half hour before I even looked at my phone. You know, so I'm sitting there waiting. I'm not even looking at my phone. You know, so again, I don't want to sound like I'm a Luddite because I'm a computer network engineer. I mean, so that's my that's my business.
Right. But you've learned not to let it control you. You control it. And that's the difference.
Absolutely. Now, there are times when Mrs. Stu is going to go someplace and she'll say, like, I'm leaving my cell phone here. And I say, well, that's okay. But, I mean, it can be a useful tool. I mean, how many times have you been in a car? Well, back in the day, if your car broke down, you went and knocked on doors and can I borrow, you know, use your phone to call a tow truck or whatever. I mean, so now you can do that right from your car. But, I mean, you just have to resist the temptation of picking up and looking at your phone. Maybe she does that because, I don't want to say she's engaging in behaviors that are not good while she's driving. But how many times have you been sitting at a red light and the car in front of you, you see the person's head down like this and the light turns green and they're not moving and all of a sudden their head snaps up and then they start moving? You know,
a year ago, my son was getting ready to put his family in the car. They were just getting the little girls in their car seats and stuff, you know, to take them out and snap them into the bases. And this guy came around the turn and he smashed their car and knocked it up onto the sidewalk. And he was busy playing on his cell phone while driving. And if they had been 2 minutes earlier or he had, you know, whatever, he would have killed them all. They would have been in and around that car at that point. But he couldn't stop looking at that phone long enough to navigate that turn.
Yeah, so if you ask me, the addictive behavior with them, I mean, the games and everything else are designed, specifically designed to engage you and want you to keep looking at it. You know, pretty, shiny, let's look at this.
It gives you that dopamine rush. Mm-hmm. You know, I was talking to my oldest son about that. He loves video games. And I said, the reason you love them so much is because it makes you feel like you've accomplished something when you haven't. And he's like, what? And I'm like, seriously, don't you whenever I've watched you and, you know, you're going through that game and you're hunting and you're getting this and you're doing that and you kill the bad guy and what have you. And you're like, yes, but you didn't do anything. Pushed a button. And you sit there and you go, I wonder why I'm not getting this done and that done. Because you're busy feeding that dopamine center in your brain with fiction. You know, I read a book on them. I do. I have Kindle, so I read the books on them because I like the fact that I can take it with me. If I am sitting in a, like if I were sitting to get my hair done, I might be reading or something like that. But I also can turn it off and just say enough's enough. I also have real books. And one of the things I found interesting This is an aside, and then we'll end. Was I was listening to a woman on a podcast one day, and she was saying about how the internet was damaging people. And she said, "I used to love to read books, and I can't read a book anymore because I'm so used to reading on the internet that books, I can't follow the long chains of thought any longer." And I hear that a lot. And in fact, there are some studies that show that children in particular, but that anybody who works and does a lot of the internet stuff, that's why the podcasts and the and all the, everything's getting shorter and shorter and shorter, because we can't hold a long train of thought anymore. And we're deliberately being educated to be that way, because then we can't think and rationalize and critically think through processes like we used to. Like, you try explaining certain concepts to young people, they look at you like you're speaking Aramaic. They're like, "What? No, I don't got time for that crap." But this is the crap that's going to help you to either live successfully in life or not live successfully in life. Yeah, but is there a video on it somewhere? Not everything comes in a video, darling. And we are deliberately training our children to be stupid. This is the first generation of kids that are going to have less education than any group of children since the beginning of this nation. Did you know that? We have so few children now. In Chicago, they could not graduate and in any kids who could read at grade level. Baltimore, Maryland, same thing. They cannot graduate children who read at their grade level or can do math. But we got them on the computer all day long. If it can do all of that, I can honestly see, if I were looking at it through the demon's eyes, why this would be a great vehicle to climb inside of and see how you can get through that door.
Well, so many vulnerable people to attack. Yeah.
And like I said, from the beginning of time, it's always been you had to give permission. And when they people get on the internet, they just click it. They think it's safe. Like my son's friend did.
I got one question, and this just popped up. So, I mean, we've talked about angels before, okay, and then how the demons are fallen angels. So there's a finite number of them. They're not reproducing, correct or incorrect?
No, you're right. Okay, although we know they are capable of reproducing with humans, because that's how what happened in the Bible. Go ahead.
So I guess only so many people out of the billions that we have on this planet right now could actually be possessed at one time.
True. They don't have to spend all their time full time with you. And, you know, even at that, there are legions. And when we say one third of heaven fell.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to know. Yeah. Maybe I don't want to know the number, but, you know, if there's a number, that'd be interesting to know that number. Yeah.
Yeah. It's terrifying. And I realized whenever, like, I've heard people talk about putting yourself into a trance and it opens up things. Transcendental meditation. There's a huge, a lot of stuff coming out of there right now, and out of yoga, of all things, about it having demonic impact on people's lives. And there are some former yoga teachers who are now coming out and speaking on the subject. And it's not as closely a guarded secret as before. And they're talking about the fact that you, basically what happens when you meditate is you open your brain, your body, and your soul to everything. And you just wait to see what comes in. It's no different than a Ouija board.
Well, look at me. I'm not a yoga person.
But anyhow, I just found it fascinating. And I can see where that's the same thing with the concentration on the internet. You know, you're just sitting there scrolling and clicking. You're not thinking, I'm going to let something into my life that's terrible, but it happens. And, you know, accidentally, like I said, with my son's friend, he was just looking for a video game, and he's like, "Dude, this looks cool. You, like, get to be the coroner, and you get to go into the Undertakers," and, like, I don't know why that's cool, but they thought it was cool. So he clicks it, and then, like, stuff starts happening in his house, and he's not able to sleep. He can't eat. He's like, "I'm really sick. I don't know what to do. Patty, I know this is weird, but I think it's something off the internet." And I'm like, "Okay, well, we'll talk about it. Give it 3 or 4 days. We'll see if it's just a little string of bad luck." And he called me on that following Monday, and he's like, "I really need help, please."
Well, I think you can assure our viewers and listeners that this particular program is not going to harm them in any way. I mean, it'll empower you, maybe let you learn some things that you didn't know before. So in that ways, it's a good thing.
And that's what I try to do all the time, is to let people learn things. And I put out all kinds of different information, because I think that it's really important for people to consider all the different possibilities and then share with us, you know, what they have learned from it, and share with us where it takes them. Sometimes we get some amazing stories. I have some I want to share in the next few weeks of people telling us stuff that has happened to them. And I appreciate it very much. So I think knowledge is always going to be power. And when we're more knowledgeable, then you can see things coming. If you tell somebody who's had a demonic oppression in their home that the moment they opened that door to see why somebody was beating on their wall of their house, it let the thing in. You gave it permission. Like I said, they go right out to that nth degree on, you know, what it means. But as long as they don't cross that line, and you click the button, you open the door, you open that window, you read that book, you put your hands on that Ouija board, they got you. Just think about what you're doing.
Maybe I shouldn't have a mat in front of my front door that says welcome. I should have one that says go away.
In the name of the Lord, go away.
Yes. Yeah. Why not? Yeah. I mean, I already have a sign that says no soliciting, political or canvassing or, you know, sales or things like that. You know, just that. Yeah. I'm not a bad guy. And my neighbors know that they can knock on my door and ring my bell.
Right. But I just thought it was fascinating, and it was weird because everything all throughout the week kept pushing me in that same direction. I'm like, okay, I guess that's where we're going today. So with that, I wish you all a good night.
Thanks, Patty. Good night.